Hello, 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 hello. My name is Imani Monet. I am the owner of Beauty Strike, and this is Behind the Beauty Podcast. Now, this is my first audio-only podcast, and it's because I really wanted to be consistent in putting podcasts out. But if you know, I just had a baby 3 weeks and 2 days ago. So, baby, like, I'm put together right now, which is amazing. I give myself props for that, for real, because, like, having a newborn baby, like, it's literally like having somebody depend on you 24/7 for their existence. And it's not even a like, it is. That's what they're doing. They're depending on you for life, for sustenance, for habitat, for et cetera, for emotional regulation, for heat regulation, for, like, all these things 24/7. So I'm giving myself grace. And I had a conversation with someone on Twitter the other day. It really wasn't the other day, sweetie. It was probably like 3 months ago. But my concept of time has become a different thing. Like, I don't know. Like, it's grown into a different thing. As I'm sure many people in general, ever since the pandemic, can agree. And even more so when you have kids. But yeah, so I had a conversation with someone on Twitter, and they were like, I wish more podcasts would stop only doing video podcasts and doing more audio. Like, you know, we want more episodes, and if you doing more audio creates that, then just do more audio. Like, we don't always need a visual. And I was just like, wow, really, people think that? Like, and they weren't even talking about mine, but then we got into a conversation about mine, and they were like, oh yeah, like, I definitely like the episodes that you have so far, but I would love to hear more, like, you know, consistently. And I was like, you know what, I'm gonna record one. And right now the baby is sleeping. For how long, I don't know, but he definitely is an arm baby. Yes, I had a little boy, so I might have to grab him. You might hear some coos, some baby coos, the little cute little noises that babies make in the background. But here we are. In this podcast, I really wanted to speak about, like, my birth journey, how pregnancy was, and a lot of things, because I really kept quiet on social media. I really kept my journey on my own, and it wouldn't have been any other way, to be honest. I'm very personal, private person, and I just had to discover what my boundaries were with sharing my pregnancy, with sharing this very special moment in my life that I don't know how many times it happens in your life, you know? So, and I wanted to preface that with saying that everybody's pregnancy journey is different. Everyone's pregnancy journey is different. Please do not compare your pregnancy journey to mine. Do not expect your pregnancy to be like mine. Do not, just create preconceived notions, based on the information that I'm telling you, and apply that to your own life, because I've watched so many videos on pregnancy and different things, and some things I was just like, whoa, that happened to somebody, and other things I'm just like, yeah, that definitely happened to me. Even if it was just like heartburn or something like that, you know, don't get scared about some of the things that I'm telling you. Also, you know, if you agree and things have happened with you that I'm sharing, definitely comment and leave it so I know that I'm not alone. but yeah, so I just wanted to put that little disclaimer out there, even though, like, there's no need for me to disclaim things. But yeah, so, and then another thing, I chose to be a mother. Like, you know, I didn't have to have my child. Nobody has to have their child. I mean, the way that this government in the U.S. is nowadays, I don't know, that might not, you know, that's another conversation. But I chose to be a mother. I chose to have my child. I'm 29 years old. A lot of people don't know how old I am. And a lot of people think that I'm older than what I am. I don't really care how people perceive my age, perceive me in that way. I don't think that age, like, equals anything. I don't think it equals maturity. I don't think it equals money. I don't think it equals growth. I don't think it equals mental capacity. I don't think, you know, I don't put age to be a part of maturity or anything, or even certain life goals or milestones. That's just me personally. Like, if I decided that I wanted to wake up and have a child at 59, that's just what I'm gonna do, because that's my prerogative. But that's me. I definitely understood that having a child, no matter if I have the partner involved, have a husband, wife, fiance, etc., boyfriend, girlfriend involved, I'm still the one that's going through the physical toll of having a child. So if I 100% don't want to do this, then I 100% am not going to do it. And I'm thankful that I am in an era and was in an era that I wanted to have a child. I could have a child, and I did have a child. So, yeah, I just wanted to put that out there. And to anyone, I want to give some advice, because, like, you know, I didn't fully understand that until me and my mom had a conversation about that, as well as, like, I had the conversation with my partner, had the conversation with myself. You know, there's certain things that you have to be honest with yourself. Like, am I ready for this? Am I ready for my schedule to change, for me to be somebody's, like, nurturing parent, parental figure, nurturing person 24/7 for I don't know how many years of their life, you know? Do I feel like I'm ready for this in my own life, meaning, like, putting my personal things to the side and just making this person the, like, the trophy and the highlight and the apple of my eye, you know? Am I ready for that? So I had to, like, really take time and think about those things as pertaining to my child as well. And I'm so glad that the answer was yes. I'm glad that the answer was yes. And if the answer is no for you, don't feel guilty because of that, because I wasn't always ready to be a parent, like, you know, and I have gone through miscarriage before, with my partner. And that is, you know, a part of the reason why I kept my pregnancy so quiet in the beginning, because I did go through that, and it did put a huge strain on our relationship. And it made us grieve for a really long time, and it even caused us to break up for some time, you know, because I didn't know how to grieve in the way that he knew how to grieve, and the way that we grieved was different, and we just went through different emotions and went down a different path. But ultimately, therapy together and alone and time and me dating other people and just being my own person for a bit after that let me know that, yes, this is my person, yes, I want to do this. Am I going to try to do it? I don't know, because that last time was a little hurtful. But hurtful as in, like I was hurt that I couldn't carry that child, you know? And it wasn't no one's fault. And I put a lot of blame on my body. And I like to think that I'm a very healthy person. I exercise daily. I step a lot. I stand a lot. I get massages, I eat healthy, I eat bad sometimes, you know, I go to the doctor, I make sure that my vitamin levels and my blood levels and everything is good. I do everything that my parents didn't have access to, and that is, a part of that is going to the doctor. A lot of, parents who maybe come from low income situations, they didn't have, like, regular doctors, dentist appointments growing up, so they passed that trauma off onto their kids, where they avoid doing those things. And I was a kid of that, and I just made sure that I didn't do that, because a lot of things I've seen health wise could be avoided if they had just gone to the doctor. So yeah. And after going through that situation, I really just, like, you know. And I found out in December that I was pregnant. And when I found out, it was really, like, I was going through a lot. I'm not gonna lie. Like, I had a parent staying with me because, you know, they had a situation where they needed to lean on me. And that parent was/is a absent parent in my life growing up. And I still wanted to obey God and be, you know, to be a good child to them, even though they weren't a good parent to me growing up. And I found out that I was pregnant that same month. And also my birthday's in December. So if you're like me, you get really reflective in your past years when your birthday comes around. So I was really just like, what is life right now? You know, like, what is life? Am I on the right path? And then boom, you're pregnant. And then mixed in with my business was doing good, but it was just like I had gone through something with an employee maybe a month or two prior to, and I didn't really get enough chance to process it because it was in the middle of the holiday season. So around my birthday and around like New Year's, I started to really process what happened with me and that employee, and it really, like, you know, got me upset and sad because I feel like in my life I have been a people pleaser for a really long time, and I thought that I had broken the cycle of the people pleasingness, and I realized that I let that situation become another situation where I people pleased to the sun, and it didn't do me any good, any justice, and in the end that person didn't have my quote-unquote back in the same way that I had theirs, and my expectations were just for them to be like me. And I have been learning and unlearning that people aren't like you. They're not going to be like you. You shouldn't expect them to. Your expectations of yourself is something that you shouldn't put onto others. Even though it's just like, dang, like, human decency, bro. Like, you know, like, human decency. But also realizing that a lot of people, they're only going to put themselves first. And that's what they should do. And as somebody who often doesn't put myself first, I had to, like, really, like, take a step back. Like, because I felt like that whole year I was putting myself first. And then I realized, like, oh, snap. Like, there's so many different ways that I let people still run over me, even though I was still fine-tuning that that thing where I was like, you know, I'm putting myself first, I'm not gonna be a people pleaser. I stopped so many different things, but then, like, after reviewing, I was like, oh wow, like, I still have to work on this in this way. You know, you heal in one way and then you learn that you're still healing in other ways. You know, healing is I'm not saying that you never heal from things, because that's crazy, and I don't perpetuate lifelong like, what is it called, therapy. I don't feel like a therapist, you should be a lifelong customer of theirs. I feel like they should give you the proper tools to work things out. And maybe if there's a season of your life where you want to pick it up and put it down, but I don't feel like you should constantly every week be needing therapy. Your therapist should give you the tools. Just like I'm in skincare, I give clients the tools, the information, the education to do certain things and work on their skin. And if you feel like you're not learning anything, that's bad. That's a bad thing, you know? I feel like that's bad. You should learn things about your skin. You should learn things to make sure that you're understanding your biggest organ in your body, right? But yeah, so I found out that I was pregnant while all these things were going on. So fast forward to January. We confirmed that I was pregnant, because, like, I knew I was pregnant, but then, like, my tests weren't popping up yes. You know, I had one yes and then a whole bunch of no's, and I'm like, no, I know I'm pregnant. Like, I feel it. Like, it felt like a light switch had went off in my body, and I knew I was pregnant. Like, I knew it. I knew it. You can't tell me. That test can't tell me I'm pregnant. I'm not pregnant. Like, you can't tell me. So, by January, I've already went to my second appointment, because I went to the first appointment and they didn't quite know if I was pregnant. And then my second appointment, they confirmed it. And this is when, like, the first 3 months, oh my gosh, like, not only was I dealing with a family member staying with me. And I didn't really have the space to facilitate them. I want to also let that be known, because like having three adults in a space that doesn't facilitate the space for three adults is a lot. Like, it's a lot. And I was putting pressure on myself to cook and clean and just be this person and go to work and, like, you know, be a good partner to my partner and, like, show up for my other side of my family. For the holidays especially, like, I bought everybody, like, matching pajamas so we can have a photo, so we can have memories and, like, you know, just doing things to just, like, I was just doing too much, like, you know? And I was like, wow, do people actually feed into me and give me back the same support and love and thoughtfulness and all the stuff that I put out onto other people? Like, do they? I had to really, like, take a break from that. And then I unsubscribed from a lot of the relationships, family-wise and friend-wise, because I definitely prayed that prayer, that magical prayer that you pray and it happens next day. It's like next day shipping. You pray that prayer, Lord, remove anybody from my life that doesn't need to be here. It is done next day. Next day shipping. Next day air. It is there on your doorstep, ready to be signed for it. Wait, actually, they don't even need to sign for it. They have a secure location to drop it off. It's done. Like, it's really funny how praying that prayer just works in 24 hours, like, literally. But I prayed that prayer, and I kid you not, I lost so many friendships, and I'm not gonna even say lost, because it wasn't a loss. It was, like, clarity that I needed, and I prayed for, and I asked for. Yeah, January was full of that. February was full of that. And the first 3 months of my pregnancy was the most horriblest thing ever. Like, I could smell somebody's perfume. And also, I didn't tell clients. Like, and I'm in a client-based business. I do facials. I do waxing. I do laser hair removal. So I'm in a client-based business. I'm in front of people's faces trying not to throw up or look like I'm going to throw up. Or, like, you know, the irritation that comes from being pregnant. Like, you get so irritated, especially having to repeat yourself, because you cannot breathe. Your lungs are literally being pushed and moved. Like, the way you can't breathe, it's very scary. Like, you're breathing, but you can't breathe. Like, you have asphyxiation. Like, it's really bad, to be honest. Like, so I had to always tell people, like, oh, I'm having, like, allergies, so if I breathe heavy, which I do have allergies, and I do have allergy-induced asthma, which is, like, a whole nother topic, but so I would tell people, like, I have allergies, you know, just so also people didn't think that, like, I had COVID or I had the flu or I was sick, and I'm doing a service on them in front of your face, because they deserve that knowledge, and also I wore masks. Also, and people still correlate that for some reason, I don't know, with, you know, the bad thing and not just people being safe. especially somebody who sees a bunch of people a day, you want to make sure that they're not breathing the same air on you that they're breathing on other people. But anyway, so I really just had to, like, be very clear with that and tell people those things, and it became exhausting, because not only is your body working double time to, like, get this baby and make sure this baby is safe and, you know, have a home for this baby and grow your body, but also, like, the hormonal changes that just, like, boost into your body, it's insane. Like, the smell factor, the hearing factor, the light sensitivity, I could not keep a meal down. Like, I could not keep a meal down at all. And the first 3 months, I really just worked through it. I literally just worked through it and took naps in the treatment room. Sometimes I would be napping in a treatment room and a client would be there. They would be standing outside the door for like 10 minutes and I did not know, even though I have the phone right next to me. I have the bell right next to me, like, to the door. And I just would not know. I would not hear because I needed so much sleep. It was very overpowering. But by the third or fourth month, I would say it got a little better where I still needed so much sleep, but it was for the fact that, like, I was getting used to the hormones and some food was starting to stay down. I just needed to realize, like, I need to eat way, way, way less and eat easier things to throw up, which is insane. Like crackers, applesauce, like things that were soft, soup, like, you know. And thankfully, I was pregnant in the wintertime that early in my pregnancy. So those things were applicable, because like I can't even imagine only eating soup in the summertime. Like, that sounds crazy to me. So yeah, like, you know, those couple months were really, really rough. And then I felt like a huge sigh of relief when I was finally able to tell people, like, finally wanted to also open up and tell people that I was pregnant, because I was like, I also didn't want, you know, people to feel like they were entitled to my pregnancy journey. I also didn't want people asking me a ton of questions, because I mentally could not handle it. Because again, like, your mind and your body is growing and shifting and changing so much. Your patience level, my patience level like decreased a lot. And it's still there. Like, I'm still having like I need to, like, you know, be like, okay, give me a minute. Like, please don't make me repeat myself 3 times. Like, please don't. Like, I'm tired. My body hurts. Like, don't make me repeat myself 3 times. But fast forwarding to like the end of my pregnancy, because there's a lot of months that you're pregnant. Fast forward to the end of my pregnancy, I had a full term birth. Hey, Chloe, stop that. Sorry, my dog is like in my room with me, in my beauty room with me, and she feels like she wants to eat everything that she sees. And she's eating one of my skincare spatulas, which is like, why are you doing that? Don't eat that. But yeah, so the end of my pregnancy, I found out that my OBGYN that I was seeing for a very long time was actually moving from coast to coast, from New York to California, and I did not know that. She had been saying that she's going away, and I started saying vacation, and she never corrected me about going on vacation or moving away 3,000. It felt like 7,000 miles in my head when she told me, but 3,000 miles away to California. Like, I did not know that she was doing that. I really thought that 100% that she was going on vacation like a week after my due date. So she had told me, like, if you don't give birth within this time, that this doctor might deliver. And number one, I didn't want the other doctor to deliver my child. I have been with you, seeing you for this entire, like, 10 months, literally 10 months. And no, I don't want to go to this other person. Like, I don't. And I had wished that I had known that at the beginning, middle, or whatever, you know, and I could have made an informed decision. But luckily, my baby came at 40 weeks in a day and not 40 weeks in a week, or else I would have had to go see another doctor. But so my due date was on that Wednesday, and the Sunday before that Wednesday, so 3 days before, I started to be in labor. Like, I had a regular doctor's appointment. So I saw her, during my regular doctor's appointment time. I had my hospital bag packed. It was in the car. My partner was with me as well. And I felt like I might go to the hospital any day now. So it was just in the car constantly, the hospital bag, and everything else that we needed was in the car as well. But I didn't know that I was in labor when I was in labor. So I went to that doctor's appointment on Sunday, and she's like, "You're having contractions." And I was like, "I am." I honestly thought that the baby was kicking me. I'm not gonna lie. Like I was having contractions and I did not know. I thought the baby was kicking me. I'm like, "Why is the baby kicking me like this? Like, why is the baby kicking me like this?" Like, and nobody believed me that my baby was big. Like, I'm a small woman in stature, for real. I'm really petite. I'm a little thick, just a little bit, but I'm really small. So I'm 5 feet, 5 feet flat, 5 feet even, 5 feet, you know, schmedium. And max 135. Like, that's me at my heavyweight. I'm 135. Like I said, I'm thick. I'm not You know, I'm thick, but I'm very small and petite. So I normally go between like a 4 and a 6 pant size, and the 6 is because of the bootay, okay? but yeah, so just to put into perspective, and long story short, I'm gonna go back, but long story short, I had a 9-pound baby, bro. Like, like, so I knew that my baby was big. I was all stomach for real my whole pregnancy, so I definitely knew that my baby was big. But people were just like, my doctor, everybody included, was just like, oh no, that's just the sac. The sac is big. The sac is big. At 32 weeks, the baby was estimated to weigh 6 pounds. So I knew by 40 weeks, the baby was going to be big. Like, I just knew it if I had a full term pregnancy. So when I was having those contractions on Sunday, they weren't really that close together. They were maybe 10 minutes apart. But from the hospital, I mean, from the doctor's appointment, she told me to go directly to the hospital. And the hospital was a 10-minute drive. So we drove right there to the hospital, and everything just started to move in triple time. Even though my partner was like, he definitely knew that I wasn't having the baby that day. He said it. He felt it. He's like, no, the baby's not coming this day. Like, he said it based on, he said, like, how the nurses were moving. He's like, the nurses aren't moving fast enough for you to, for me to feel like the baby's gonna come. And I was like, oh, okay. Like, that's interesting. You know, so I felt a little secure, because, like, I was so confused, because as soon as I got to the hospital, the contractions just revved up, and I was like, wait, do you know we're at the hospital, baby? Like, did my baby know or hear the doctor say, okay, go to the hospital, and that means it's time to come out? Like, they started to really rev up, and I was like, okay, this is a contraction. Like, no, this doesn't feel like a kick. This feels like you are, like, you have a black hole inside of my body and you are trying to come out. Like, it hurts so bad. Not to scare anybody, but it really started to hurt. Like, it really started to hurt, child. But then they stopped, and this whole time they had like a contraction monitor on me, so it was monitoring the contractions and scribbling them down on this paper, as well as like the baby's heart rate and my heart rate and stuff like that. So they was monitoring all of that, and basically after like an hour or two or three or five, I have no concept of time at this point, they was like, it's not happening today, give it a few more days, give it a day or two. And I was like, what? Like, they, so I'm having contractions, they're 10 minutes apart, they go to 10 minutes to 8 minutes apart, and they're telling me that I can't stay here because they're not like 3-5 minutes apart. Like, that's insane. So we go back home, I get discharged, go back home, and then that Wednesday I had a, did I have another doctor's appointment? Wow, yes, I did. Okay, so that Wednesday I had another doctor's appointment. So me and my partner, we get ready to go, we go to the doctor's appointment. This time I knew for a matter of a fact I was having contractions. They hurt. But at the same time, my water didn't burst. Oh, I forgot to tell y'all, on that Sunday, I was 3 centimeters dilated. So I just didn't move past 3 centimeters dilated in the time that I was at the hospital. So that's another reason why they sent me away as well. So Wednesday I go back in the office, cause that's my due date. So you have to come on your due date, even though I just had an appointment on that Sunday. So I come in on my due date. I am having contractions. I feel it. They're there. Like, and it started to happen every single time I was in a hospital or doctor's office setting. Like, when I'm at home, it was like nothing. Maybe when I was in a shower, maybe when it was time to go to sleep, like, it would start hurting, and it didn't feel like the contractions that I felt inside the doctor's office or felt inside of the hospital. They just felt totally different. Like, I'm like, what are y'all pumping into this air? Because this feels crazy. It really felt crazy. I'm not gonna lie to you. It really felt like somebody is like kicking. It felt like kicking to me. I thought that he was kicking. I thought that my baby was kicking the whole time. Like, I thought he was just like not happy. I thought I ate something bad. Like, I thought I had gas. Like, it didn't feel like the world was ending. Like, how movies and TV shows portray contractions being like, that's not what it felt like to me. But you know, they don't really convey a feeling in those, but they convey a visual, and it's just not how I visually felt. You know, if that makes sense, comment below, because I don't know. But yeah, so again, when I get to the doctor's office on Wednesday, I could barely walk down the hall. I could barely walk down the hall. Like, so my partner, they parked our car or was looking for parking, and I just went up because I didn't want to be late for the appointment. So I go up, and as soon as I get off that elevator, I could not walk down the hallway to go to the treatment room. Like, I could not walk. Like, I was like, oh my God. Like, I felt like the room was spinning, the halls was spinning, like everything was spinning. So again, she hooks me up to the contraction machine, everything, and she's like, go to the hospital now. I'll call them and let them know that you're on your way. But go to the hospital right now. So we went to the hospital, thankfully. And this time it was totally different from Sunday. Like, they were in full action that came in. Also, why are you making women sign things while they are going through contractions? Because those contractions that I felt on that Wednesday that I went, child, Chile, child, you're asking me to give you my insurance card. You're asking me for like this test, what is it, hepatitis B test, to make sure that you don't need antibiotics when you deliver, because if you have hepatitis B as a mother and you're giving the vaginal birth, you need to get antibiotics put around your vajayjay so you don't pass that on to your baby when they're born. But there's a form. Like, I'm so glad that I had everything in a side pocket for my partner to just pull out, because why are you asking me for that? Get me to the room and get this baby out for real right now. Like, oh wait, I forgot to tell y'all, before we went to the hospital, my doctor, I asked my doctor, because one of my clients, and I was so thankful that she told me this. She was like, girl, I wasn't able to eat for 17 hours while I was in that hospital, because you can't eat and give birth at the same time. I was like, so wait, what? Like, so she was like, if I could change anything, it would be going to eat before I went to the hospital. And I asked my doctor, like, should I go eat before we go to the hospital? And she was like, yes, girl. So my pre-birth meal was Chick-fil-A. I had a chicken sandwich, chicken nuggets, fries, and a lemonade. And Polynesian and Chick-fil-A sauce. That is my Chick-fil-A order, okay? With a cup of ice on the side, because I was iron deficient. But I'll get into that later. So yeah, I thankfully had food, because I did not give birth until like a whole day later. All right, I can laugh at it now, but going through that, traumatizing, sorry. It was so traumatizing, I'm not gonna lie. So going to the hospital again, we're in action now. I'm in a different type of room this time. They hook me up, they change my outfit, they make me sign things. I'm being whisked off in a wheelchair. Like, the first time, this didn't happen. That's probably why he knew I wasn't giving birth that day, because they didn't pull out the wheelchair for me at all. They was like, girl, you could walk, you ain't giving birth today. Oh my gosh. And then when they put me in a room, they didn't allow him to be in there. I was like, wait, what? Where is he going? He had to fill out some paperwork for me. And they had to wait until I was fully hooked up to the machinery and stuff like that, so then he can come in. So then he comes in, right? He comes into the room. I'm in there. The room was beautiful, by the way. Very big, very nice. My doctor, because we discovered that she was actually moving, I think she tried to pull a few strings for me and get me like my own private room, this, that, and the third. And it really helped out, because I really needed it, you know, because this was a lot. So, I'm in the operation room, basically, where I'm having my baby, and they started to get the baby's little area prepped, where as soon as you have the baby, they put the baby on and clean the baby up, they weigh the baby, they do all that stuff. They had me hooked up to all these machines. Oh my gosh, like the amount of things that they had me hooked up to, like I still have scars, and it's been 3.5 weeks. I still have scars on my body with all the IVs that I needed because I was iron deficient. Me becoming pregnant, I got an iron deficiency, and I never knew how bad iron deficiency was. And I never really understood what iron deficiency was. So being iron deficient, your body does not produce red blood cells how it should produce red blood cells. And obviously that's a bad thing if you're going into a major surgery like being pregnant. Being pregnant, you are going through a major surgery. Don't let anybody tell you or convince you otherwise. This is the biggest surgery that you may have in your entire life. And thank God I haven't had other surgeries, you know? So I literally had to sign something saying that, if needed be, I would, be able to get a blood transfusion. Somebody donated blood, you know, I'm willing to accept donated blood in the case that I lose too much blood. Like my iron levels were super low. They still are low. I'm taking so many different iron supplements to make sure. And that's why I felt dizzy. That's why I felt woozy. And a lot of things with my nails, my hair, my skin, my mouth changed because of the iron deficiency. And, you know, that's not something that I really knew. I always knew people like saying, oh, they're anemic. Oh, they're cold all the time or whatever. Or even that chewing ice was a sign of iron deficiency. Like me now being not as iron deficient, I don't even want to chew ice anymore. Like, that's crazy. Like, being iron deficient is, like, really insane. It's really insane. I can't even go into full detail of how insane it is because, like, honestly, a part of your brain does this thing where it doesn't remember things that's too traumatizing. So, yeah. There that is. But, yeah, I signed things that, you know, and they even gave me iron injections, like black iron fluid directly into my IV because that's how iron deficient I was, and, you know. So after that, my mom came. My mom also came the other day, Sunday, that I was giving birth. And she was like, you know, so excited and stuff like that, being mean to the doctors, making sure they do what they need to do, as your mom should, per. But yeah, then she came on Wednesday and was recording everything and there, and you know, the doctors were like, I probably won't have the baby until 12 or after 12, and mind you, it was like 4 o'clock in the afternoon. So I'm sitting there going through all that, thankfully that I ate, because they were like, no, you can't eat, and I was like, oh my god. So they were just giving me juice and stuff like that, and I kid you not, everything that I had, sorry for this, I threw it up. I threw up that whole Chick-fil-A, I threw up the water, I threw up the apple juice, the cranberry juice, everything that they was giving me, child. So that's why they weren't allowing me to eat. And then I always had a part of my birth plan, no epidural and stuff like that. Yeah, that got thrown out the window because I tried that nitrous oxide thing, which is laughing gas. I've had oral surgery. Oh, well, I don't think that's a major surgery. Whatever. I got wisdom teeth taken out. And I did nitrous oxide. And, yeah, I've done that before. So I felt comfortable with that. I didn't feel comfortable with getting a shot in my spine, to be honest. And then I just don't know the long-term repercussions of that. But, honey, baby, those contractions started to speed up and speed up and speed up. And the nitrous oxide wasn't kicking it. Like, it wasn't doing what it needs to do, baby. So, the nitrous oxide, it felt like I had 2 lychee martinis. That's how it felt. And it was so, I was so giggly. I'm normally giggly, but it felt, like, giggly and, like, woozy. But that pain as the contractions intensified, it literally made my legs shake. Like, my legs was moving back and forth. It was hard to control the lower half of my body because those contractions were so deep and so strong. Later to find out that my baby's head was 34 centimeters wide in circumference. So, my little butt, and if you know anything about contractions and diameters, or like how wide the vajayjay contracts to give birth, it's 10 centimeters. So, 34 centimeter baby head coming out of 10 centimeters, no, wasn't happening. So, but that wasn't how we found out. I didn't give vaginal birth, clearly. But every time I had a contraction, the baby's heart rate would drop significantly, like more than half. I'm looking at the machinery, you know, because I'm hooked up to the contraction. I see the baby's heartbeat. I see my heartbeat. So everything is there for me to see. And I was just like, what is going on? Like, why does that keep happening? And when it happened, a team of nurses, like six nurses, would come in and just like do everything to stabilize me. So we went from them manually popping my water, because at that point I was 7 centimeters dilated, and just I wouldn't go further than that. And what would happen was the baby's heart rate would drop whenever I had a contraction. So to make sure that the baby comes out, especially because now the baby has no water, and we didn't want to go on and on and on, you know, like I said, I was there at 4 p.m. the day before. I actually had the baby the next day at 5 a.m. So, I feel like I was there earlier. No, I was there earlier. I was at the doctor's office earlier because my appointment was like 11:30, and we got there at 2. Yeah, we got there at like 2. The next time I looked at my phone, it was like 4 p.m., but we got there at like 2. So yeah, I ended up having the baby the next day at like wee hours in the morning. But yeah, it was a lot, because having to do, number one, I went back on like not doing a natural birth with having the epidural. And the epidural was like crazy, because I have slight scoliosis, and it's something that developed, honestly, through my career, and not in my early career, especially not positioning my body correctly on a stool and leaning a certain type of way. So my hips are uneven, and my back kind of has like a little roll. It's not noticeable to the eye, but as somebody who goes to a chiropractor, I knew that, and somebody who has gone to physical therapy, I knew that personally. So yeah, getting the epidural was a bit challenging, because the doctor or the anesthesiologist had to, kind of like balance my hip muscles so it could be even, so they could actually access my spine correctly. I'm just glad to know these things, and that's why knowing your body is so amazing, and I urge everybody to just find out more about themselves, and that's about your physiology of your body. So that, and oh my god, just like hide that freaking needle from me, bro. Like, hide that needle, because even imagining a long needle going into my spine just had me like, whoa. And then you literally have to stay still, you cannot move. And the first anesthesiologist to do it, like, she just kept poking the wrong place. And imagine somebody poking the wrong place with the needle going in your spine, bro. That was so annoying. And then the other doctor came in, and he just did it right away. Super easy, super great. I'm so thankful for him. Thankfully, thank God, we went into deciding that I needed to do emergency C-section, because the baby wasn't going to come out. And it was a high risk of the baby losing oxygen and things like that, and things that really started to like scare me a lot, especially for how long I was in labor, and for how long like he didn't have fluid. That's the most important thing. Like, if they hadn't broke my water, then maybe the baby would have been more safer for longer in there. But the baby has no water, and now the baby has no oxygen because the baby's not out. So, you know, you can't just have a baby inside of you with no water. That's just, you know. So, every contraction, again, the baby's heart rate dropped by half, and it was very nerve-wracking. Like, that's not something that you want to see, hear, or experience, like, a million nurses coming into the room and telling you that, or you seeing it before the nurses see it, you know? It's not something, and it didn't only happen once or twice or three times, it happened multiple times. So, by then, they were like, you need to just make a decision, like, if you're gonna do this or not. I know you didn't want to do it, but, like, you know, here it is. So my doctor was really, like, understanding. She really wanted to work with me with my birth plan. A lot of things with my birth plan did happen. I don't really feel like sharing my whole birth plan right now. Maybe I'll do that in, like, a TikTok or something. But, yeah, a lot of my birth plan did happen, and a lot of things didn't. Like, the epidural, the students being in the room, because I said no. And then one student ended up being in the room. That really bugged me out because they weren't helpful at all. And then, you know, the whole thing about the C-section, I wanted to do a natural birth, but my body didn't allow me to, and I'm okay with that. So going into being whisked into the C-section room, oh my gosh, like, it happened so fast. So as soon as I decided yes, they literally moved. We moved right away. I had to decide who's going to be in the C-section room with me, and thank God I have my mom. Not that my partner's bad, but this is his first time going through any of this, you know? And I just really wanted my mom in the room, you know? I love my mom, thankful for my mom. Me and her have a very interesting relationship, but but in this moment, I knew that she would come through for me in the way that I needed to be supported, and advocate for me the way I needed to be. Not that my partner wouldn't. I just don't think he knew or knows what should happen to advocate for me the way that he needs to. Throughout my pregnancy, he's been asking the doctor questions, etc. He knows the birth plan. He knows all these things, but it's still different having a woman advocate for you versus, like, a man in that situation, because men don't really go through that. A lot of times with pregnancy and somebody giving birth, it's the first time that they're seeing it when they're going through it. And women, we tend to just know a little bit more, you know? So, I had my mom in the room, and thankfully I did, because, I had, like, so as soon as they put me in the room, they transferred me to another bed, which this whole thing is, like, it's a very interesting, intimate, and very, very, I don't know how to say, but it can feel embarrassing giving birth, because especially when you're getting a C-section, like, they're doing a whole surgery, so you're literally naked. Like, you're naked on a bed, and they're transferring you from one bed to another with maybe, like, 8 people in a room, and you're completely naked. And that can feel, like, very intimate. I'm not one who gets embarrassed easily, especially in my industry. I see naked people every day in my industry, especially doing laser hair removal. Yeah, I'm laser neck cootie cat, you know? So, I didn't feel that way, or I don't feel weird about being naked, but I felt weird about being that vulnerable. It was more about being vulnerable than being naked, because it was like, you know, my life is in the hands of these people that are in the room, and hopefully they really meant that oath that they took. Especially being a Black woman, it just was, like, very intimidating. The things that you see and you read about giving birth, I definitely felt that with some of my experience there, not with my doctor in particular, but with other people that were there. For example, soon as they laid me down, I knew that I was going to throw up. And from the moment they laid me down, my doctor had already started to, like, do the incision, because, again, the baby's heart rate was dropping. That's not something that you want to keep dropping for very long. So I felt my doctor start beginning, and I'm literally being strapped to this table like Christ the Redeemer. Like, my arms are open, and my legs are straight. So I am literally like, you know, spready. I'm in a full spready in there. So, and my arms were strapped down to the table. So they weren't just spread open. They were strapped down. And I think my legs were as well, so I wouldn't move them. But honestly, they numbed my whole lower body. So I really couldn't feel anything. But you still feel the pressure. And you still feel somebody touch you, but it doesn't hurt per se. But yeah, like I felt like I was going to throw up. So I literally laid down and I was like, I'm going to throw up. I'm laying down, like I'm laying face down and throwing up. You can choke on yourself, like literally. And I'm telling them that, I'm saying it multiple times. And I think they thought I was just nervous or anxious. And I'm like, no, I'm going to throw up. And I threw up. And then finally somebody gets me something to throw up. I'm like asking. Like, I asked, can I sit up? Can I turn over? Like, I'm going to throw up and I'm laying down. Like, I can choke. Like, and the person that was there was literally ignoring me. Like, there's two anesthesiologists there to make sure that I'm good, because they had to administer another dose of anesthesia to my lower legs. Because it has been so long since I last received the anesthesia that I was regaining feeling again. And anesthesia is prone to making you throw up. So and I'm very prone to throw up. Like, I'm gonna throw up on my period, babe. That's just me. I do. It's a thing. And that's a high progesterone level. When you have a lot of progesterone in your body, don't quote me, I feel like it's progesterone, then you're prone to like more nausea. But yeah, so then they finally get the tube to soak, to take out all the vomit, because like I was literally throwing up, like while they're cutting me open to get my baby out. So I kid you not, this whole C-section surgery, it maybe took 30 minutes, and most of the time was them sewing me back up and making sure that I was good, as opposed to me like actually, you know, taking the baby out. Taking the baby out maybe took 10 minutes, five. For real. And it was such a glorious experience. Like, it really was such a glorious experience. Like, hearing, because I heard him before I was able to see him because of the curtain, which you can see through, by the way. You can see through that curtain. You can't see it, like, you can't see visually what's happening, but you can see the shadows. And the shadows was enough for me. I was like, put another curtain, please. And my mom was over there looking at them inside of me and not trying to like show it with her eyes, but like you know your mom, you know your parent, like you know what that look means. So it was crazy to like see her eyes, like whoa. I'm like, I'm glad I don't see what she sees, because don't show me that, don't show me for real. And then hearing my babies cry for the first time, it was so amazing. Like, it was really one of those experiences where I'm like getting emotional from it. Where you instantly fall in love. Like, I've never had that experience. Never. I've never felt for anyone in that way before. My dog, my plants, boyfriends, friends, siblings. Don't be mad, little sis. Parents, like, never felt that way. But hearing my babies cry for the first time, it was like a warrior's chant. Like, I will die for you, you little one. Like, I will live for you, you little one. Like, I will do, like, baby, I got you, I'm your mommy. Like, it felt like a war chant. Like that was my war chant, that baby crying. And I instantly tears fell, and I couldn't, of course, hold the baby. Number one, I'm strapped down. So after they clean the baby off, my mom is like, oh, first of all, whenever somebody says first of all, it's never the first thing. It's crazy. Anyway, but everybody, the baby came out. Everybody was like, oh, wow, this is a big baby. I was like, oh, my God, what just came out of me? Because obviously I didn't know how big and wide and everything that the baby was when he first came out. But Everybody was like, wow, this looks like a 3 month old. This looks like a 3 month old. Wow, this is a big baby. This big baby came out of her little butt. No wonder why we had to, you know, I started to feel justified in having to do a C-section as well, because in all honesty, he was born 8.9 pounds. He was almost 9 pounds, literally 9 pound baby. He was big in his head. Love him. I love you. You in another room sleeping. Love you, baby. But you came out big. Your head, 34 centimeters. That was not fitting through a 10 centimeter. It wasn't. But on his head, you could see, and this is something else that I learned as well. On their baby's head, when they're first born, you could see, like, their head is, like, cone-shaped a little bit, because they're trying to come through the vaginal canal. And I could see that he tried, and it just made me so emotional, because, like, you could see that the baby tried to come out and tried to help, but he just couldn't. And I'm so thankful to have the support and the doctors in the room to make sure that he came out the way that he needed to come out. That cone shapedness went away after like a week, but it was just like amazing to see the properties of him working with me in my body to come out and join me into the living world. You know, that was just so amazing to see. And as soon as he went on me, his crying immediately stopped, his eyes opened, and he looked at me, and it was just like so amazing. It was so amazing. Like, that moment will forever be etched in my head. I'm like getting so emotional talking about it. It was just a magical moment. Like, I really felt the presence of God in there. And after that, he was born, my mom had him, and they were sewing me up, and my mom just had him in her arms, and he was in front of me and in front of my face, and I held him, and I just cried and cried and cried and cried, and they sewed me up, and they brought me back to the room so I could be evaluated, you know, because I had a serious surgery. And I started to lose a lot of blood when they started to sew me up. So they were just holding me for evaluation in another room, making sure that the baby had a lot of skin to skin with me. And yeah, like, then I moved to the next room, and daddy saw him, which was such an amazing thing. And I just started to get rest. And yeah, you know, this was such an amazing experience. I really hope, if you're able to, that you can go through the joy of being pregnant, because it is worth it when you see their little face and hear their little cry, and you're able to touch them for the first time. And I really feel like I was forever changed in those 24 to 48 hours that I was able to give birth. And it's such an amazing feeling. Such an amazing feeling that I felt like I needed to do it again. I'm not pregnant. That's not a pregnancy announcement. Please, Lord. not right now. But I feel the need to do it again at some point. But yes, this was such an amazing experience. And thank you for hearing and being open to my birth experience. And even though things didn't happen according to plan, they happened in God's plan, in God's timing, and everything happened the way that it needed to happen. I thank my mom. I thank my partner for being there. I thank my little sister for being there emotionally. And for my friend for being there emotionally, Desiree, for you being there for me as well and checking up on me and coming to the hospital when I was in recovery, and bringing me beautiful flowers, all of you bringing me food and flowers and well wishes and everything else. Thank you so, so much. I really appreciate it so much. You really don't understand what it did for me, because I'm very much so someone who is always putting on my strongest soldier belt, and it felt so good to not have to be the strongest soldier, and for people in my life to not judge me for it or not look down on me, and literally just like show up for me. And I really thank y'all so freaking much. Like, it means so much to me. And now I have this wonderful, beautiful little baby boy. Oh, so amazing. Thank you. If you want to know more about anything that I shared, whether it's like my iron deficiency journey, some of the things that I hormonally went through, like hyperpigmentation, etc., all these things, I will be talking about it in another podcast episode. But if you specifically want me to bring something up, let me know in the comments. And again, thank you so much for listening to this audio broadcast. I promise to do more now that I have released the expectation of doing audio and video at the same time. And thank you again. This is Behind the Beauty Podcast, brought to you by Beauty Strike, presented by Imani Monet. And I will see you in the next episode. Thank you. Bye.